with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are. Welcome to Tuesday afternoon as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio along Michigan Avenue. And we'll talk to John and Jerry and check in on Wall Street in just a sec. Oh, Philip Weiss will be here as well, part of WorkRight Solutions, to talk about, you know, it's intern season and how to best handle the interns in your workplace. You got to find stuff for them to do or they will destroy your office. We'll talk to Philip about that in just a bit. Right now, let's say hello to John Najarian. You watch him on CNBC, and of course, he's at the Najarian Family Office. Follow him on Twitter at John Najarian as well. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Stephen, it's a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
I think I just introduced you about four or five different ways. Is there anything I missed?
No. I think you covered almost all of it. Hey, there's a couple other cryptocurrency things I could throw at you, but we'll skip that for now.
No one understands cryptocurrency, John. So, you know, I just saw that the president now, I don't know if he spoke at the White House or where, but he's hinting that perhaps the summit with Kim Jong-un in Singapore is going to be delayed for one reason. Well, we know what reasons, I guess, would be delayed. And I thought, well, maybe that'll have an impact on Wall Street. And I've been watching the numbers. It doesn't seem to. Why is that, or why am I wrong in expecting that there might be a reaction there?
Well, a very smart investor on our show, Leon Cooperman, who runs at Omega Advisors. When we both heard the president say that, he didn't say it would be delayed. He just said, well, we don't know if it's going to happen. You know, it might be delayed. And if it is, we hope it's not going to be, because it's a big thing and it's the most important thing and yada, yada. And Leon Cooperman said he's trying to do a beat and raise, which in Wall Street parlance is where you come out with earnings that are better than expected, and then you raise guidance as well. In other words, that usually causes the market to rock to the upside. So I think a lot of the interpretations on Wall Street were pretty similar, that he's basically sandbagging by putting an idea that, oh, maybe it's not going to be so big, so it makes it that you can beat and raise, and it's a bigger deal when you do.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, let's talk about JCPenney. They announced today, or they lost their CEO today, Marvin Ellison, heading to Lowe's. You know, JCPenney is one of those companies that it just seems like it's a matter of time. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, sadly, the person that put him in this position is Ron Johnson. He's the genius, which he was at the time, that helped with Steve Jobs create the Apple stores. And because of that huge runaway success, JCPenney gave him a huge contract to come in and run their retail. Huge mistake. Right. It's not exactly a high-tech store. It's, you know, a traditional shopping experience.
It's a socks and underwear stop.
Yep, and he did a lot of things that were not popular with shoppers. Even though he thought that they would be, things that he called fair pricing, where nothing's on sale, it's always offered at the best price and all that sort of thing. That's not why people went to JCPenney. He took the stock from about $40 a share down to single digits before they fired him. And no one else has been able to make a recovery, including this gentleman, who's definitely left for greener pastures over at Lowe's.
So I see Lowe's is up today. Home Depot is down. Is that about to move?
Yeah, I don't think the Home Depot, you know, response is warranted, really, because obviously Lowe's being a better competitor, that would be one thing that could steal some Home Depot thunder. But, you know, Home Depot is the 800-pound gorilla in that space. They're the second largest regular bricks and mortar retailer on earth behind Walmart, and they are not exactly going to be crimped by any success over at Lowe's. It'll be at the margins. That's my feeling anyway.
Tell me about AutoZone as well, because I see they were down, I don't know where it is now, John, but they were down almost 8% earlier today.
Right. They had, we've had a really mixed bag of the folks in that space, you know, whether it's AutoZone or Advanced Auto Parts, or any of the others, O'Reilly Automotive, any of the companies in that space. One comes out with great numbers, another one comes out with terrible numbers. And in the case that you're mentioning, yeah, those were terrible numbers, and people basically shied away from the stock because of it. And they're not very patient with some of the companies that aren't hitting it hard where they need to, especially if other competitors, like you mentioned already, Home Depot, trading at all-time highs and then easing a little. If you don't hit the numbers, people are not going to stay with your stock.
China talked about cutting tariffs on autos earlier today, and I know the trade war is on again. It's off again. I think it's currently off again, but the car stocks are benefiting from the latest move by China. Is there any sort of permanence to this, do you think, or is it all just still very fluid?
Well, I imagine it is still fluid, but the fact, Stephen, that they came out and said, we're going to cut it from 25% down to 15% by July 1st, they've actually even put a date on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's maybe that carrot and the stick that they're trying to use with President Trump, as far as saying, you know, they have wanted ZTE, this large Chinese technology firm, to be able to do deals in the United States. Many, including Mark Rubio, who you heard today, I'm sure, were not fond of ZTE getting away unscathed. And now the president's saying, well, we'll probably not bar them from doing business, but they'll probably pay a very large $1 billion-plus fine for some of the intellectual property theft that they've done. And they have the money, so they could certainly do that.
Isn't it funny, John, and I don't want to get political during the show, but, you know, there's been so much with President Trump that things that would sink other presidents no longer quite register, and I think the ZTE story is one of them. Because in other administrations, this would be
right.
A huge deal.
Yep. And, you know, because of the reporting of it, too, it's not like the president said, ZTE is going to sail straight through, everything's hunky-dory. But Mark Rubio took it that way because of the reporting on the issue. And then the president pushed back and said, I haven't said anything of the sort. They're probably going to face a $1 billion fine. But then if they live up to this, they might be able to be back in our good graces again, which is completely different than just saying they're back in our good graces just because we need China to negotiate with North Korea.
Yeah, but he did say
the way it was played.
But it was about ZTE, right, where he said he needed to help them save their jobs?
Yep, yeah, he did, so. And I'm sure he wants to. And the issue will be whether or not he caved too much to get China's help with North Korea. He wanted to push back on that, obviously.
The good news is it'll never be over, so there'll be more to talk about next Tuesday, John Najarian.
Yes, there will, sir.
I appreciate you joining us. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We're a little behind, but real quick, what are you watching today? I know people depend on that, so what are you looking at?
We had some very strong activity yet again in the oil drilling stocks. You know, it's Diamond Offshore, DO, as well as Range Resources, RRC. We were buying both of those for clients today.
Excellent. John, we'll talk again next Tuesday.
Thank you, Stephen.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 1223. Philip Weiss is in the studio, the president of WorkRight Solutions. Philip, thanks for coming back. Good to see you again.
Good to be here.
Tell me about WorkRight Solutions. Let's just do that right away.
Thank you. WorkRight Solutions, we're a company that focuses on looking at legal trends, looking at legal requirements, and making them as simple as possible for the public, for clients, and for others.
So we're talking about internships a little bit. I was telling you, we're going to run an interview I did on Memorial Day with Alan Lightman, the physicist. He wrote the book Einstein's Brain a few years ago. And you and I were both talking about how in our work life, it's so busy that we tend to lose the bigger picture. And that's sort of what Lightman is talking about. But you see that too.
Yeah, really across industries, we're seeing, in many cases, with the economy doing better, with people spending more, there's this focus on meeting the deliverable, meeting the need, but not stepping back and saying, all right, where are we going to be next year
right.
or in 5 years? So strategy is sacrificed for the sake of keeping up.
That's exactly it. Yeah, meeting the need so much rather than the big picture. All right, well, that's coming up on the Memorial Day show. You brought in about 15 interns standing around behind you.
Yeah, they look impatient.
But it is internship time. My son starts his internship in a couple of weeks. But it's the sort of thing that, well, I was surprised to see 97% of big companies now offer internships. It seems like we went through a phase where they were sort of fading away, and now they're back.
Yeah, and there's probably a couple of reasons. No one's done a really clear, compelling study on why that is the case. But on the one hand, there is this expectation that, well, you know what, we're busier. Again, we need a stopgap. Maybe interns are part of that, at least seasonally. And then on the side of the students who are applying, they see it as an almost de facto required resume builder.
That you have to have one or two.
You get pressure on both ends.
So the danger, though, for companies is to have an internship program but not really have an internship program.
That is so well put. I should have titled it just that.
You might have.
That's right. And really, it's a problem because on day one, the employer may not have the right rules in place. And prior to day one, they don't have a plan in place. And they will always suffer. We call it intern-induced indigestion, and it can have a lot of manifestations.
So interns can impact the office culture if they bring their own, right? So I would imagine that's a big part of it. You have to establish what's expected of the interns when they come in from the interns and also from those who are working with the interns.
That's exactly right. Because especially if you have a group of interns, they will bring their own culture. And if you're not filling that vacuum, they'll define how to behave, how to engage with customers. We had a client that came to us. It was a landscaping company, and their interns had sort of self-declared breaks while doing landscaping work, in which they engaged in unbridled twerking on customers' lawns.
Let's just take a minute, Philip, and explain twerking for me.
It's
fine. We get it.
It's not in the legal dictionary of acceptable conduct.
But that's exactly what we're talking about.
Right.
And then that hurts the business because the clients are seeing that.
They are. In fact, no intern I know would actually play around without posting what they were doing or party without posting.
Right.
So they ended up doing short videos with Lou's Landscaping logo on the van in the background and the Mulrooney family home on the mailbox. So that twerking episode had a lot of sponsors that were unintended.
Was the edging done well, though, in the yard?
You know what? The break was short because the boss stepped in.
Tell me about variety, voice, and vision.
Yeah, those are three great sort of watchwords and guideposts for how to think about a good internship program. You don't want to simply give people tasks. You want to make sure that there's a variety of roles they can play and that they have a voice where appropriate in terms of how to make those roles effective. Another client came to us. They ran a Noah's Ark-themed amusement park. And they had promised Steve that their interns would have an engaging, creative summer. To their horror, the interns/part-time summer workers realized that was primarily cleaning up after the 200 animals that roamed the park and selling a popular item called Noah's Niblets, which were deep-fried corn niblets.
Oh.
And these interns, in essence, rebelled and said, you know what, we know it wasn't going to be sort of this high-end scholarly experience, but we expected a variety of tasks.
My daughter interned last year at Baxter Credit Union up in Vernon Hills, and my son's going to this year. And I bring it up only because when I was reading this about vision and voice and all, I was surprised how empowering they were to her and that they really wanted her input. And she felt that she was there to truly help it. And that it turned out to be a positive experience. So that's what we're talking about.
It makes all the difference.
Philip Weiss from Work Right Solutions. Thanks for coming by.
Good. Good to see you.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 12:37 as we sit here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. All right, Kim Gordon led the headlines at the bottom of the hour with the news. We're going to start with Stacey Cunningham becoming the new president of the New York Stock Exchange. On a phone line this week is Suzanne Muschen. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff on WGNRadio.com, a podcast that looks at gender in the workplace, gender in society, things like that. Suzanne, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
For the first time ever, first time in, what, 226 years, a woman is running the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange. Not too shabby.
Yes. It's an incredible breakthrough in this particular era, in the moment, in the Me Too moment, in the financial district. It's great. And, you know, she also had a pretty interesting career, which is what I love about her story, is that she's not a woman who took a traditional pathway to get to where she is.
Well, she started at the bottom, which is fairly traditional or somewhat traditional,
yeah,
right? And worked her way
from there.
Kind
of a newsroom, like the mailroom type story.
Right. But what strikes me, well, a couple of things. First of all, she started in 1994 when it was a very different industry. I mean, who were the men on the floor at the time would have ever betted that this intern among them would one day be the president of the New York Stock Exchange? Probably none of them.
I'm going to suggest a big donut there, Steve.
Right. But what you're referring to, I think, is that she took time off for culinary school.
She did. And this is, I almost wish she were a commencement speaker at all the graduations this year, just telling, you know, a lot of the students today who might feel a lot of pressure to, you know, put one foot in front of the other and start in the mailroom and work your way up and earn the gold watch. You know, today's world is so very different, and she's such a perfect example of someone who, yeah, started in the mailroom, worked her way up, but then took a pretty huge detour, followed her passions, went to culinary school, learned a trade, thought it was awesome, then went back, and now look where she is.
Okay.
It's a really great story.
What jumps out at me about that, then, is that this is one of the arguments about that holds women back, that they say, you know, they don't advance as quickly, they don't make as much because they leave the workforce. Whether it's to raise families or whatever. Well, she detoured and seems to have done just fine. I'm not sure what that means.
Exactly. Well, I see that. I love what you just said, which is to raise a family or whatever. I mean, the fact is, if they hadn't put in that she went to culinary school, right, the point that you're making, which is a good one, is she could have left for any number of reasons. It just happens that the news reported that she took this detour to cooking school.
Right.
But the fact is, she found her way back, which means lots of women can find their way back.
And reach success.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
I love it
in this male-dominated industry, no less.
And I'm kind of, Kim Gordon, I don't know if you're there or listening, but in the headlines, there's another major exchange, right, that's led by women now?
The NASDAQ. And I think her name is Adina Friedman, and she was appointed to that position last year.
So both of the major indices in New York. It's female-dominated.
Let's go, ladies.
So let's go from there, from lower Manhattan up to Midtown, is it, to where the fashion industry is, and look at it there, because it's a very different story there. You would think women would be leading the way in the fashion industry, and you point out a story that says anything but.
It's a great study that just came out because of the perception issue. I think we all have this perception that, unlike the financial industry, where the perception is definitely that it's male-dominated, and we're seeing now these examples where it's not, fashion seems to be the one place where we think that women really have had this cleared pathway to the top. But this new study has just come out where it says that, in fact, it is not quite the case, that of the large fashion houses, you know, the ones that we tend to know the names of, the statistics show that actually only 14% of those major brands are run by women.
Why do you think that is?
I think, well, the survey shows that there's still a number of barriers to entry. And this is a pretty interesting one. I looked through the study to try to find one that really jumped out at me. And it said 71% of the survey participants reported that having a female supervisor before the vice president level. Okay, mm-hmm. So 71 before the vice president. So that's a big number. But then it drops to 52% when you go to the next stage. So right up until almost the C-suite, and then it starts to get lower. And here was another nice little hint at a red flag, which is that the respondents, one of them said that one of the managers said that he was less likely to give a woman critical feedback that might be helpful to having her rise to the top because he was worried that, quote, she might cry.
Yeah, that's nice. I think the fashion industry is abusive anyway.
Well, they say that
I don't care who's. I don't care if it's men running it, women running it, Meryl Streep running it. I think it's.
There's tons of stories that show that. I mean, I think that's. You're right. I think that's a pretty known thing. And they say in the study that it shows, you know, sexism, lack of mentorship, a lot of aggression, but still, I think that people will be surprised to see that even in an industry that supposedly caters to women, we're still not seeing them rise to the top.
You know, it's funny, you took my term in a way I didn't mean it, but I think I agree with you. When I say abusive, I just think that these companies come up with new forms to take money from women. I mean, they do it to men as well, you know, where they'll change.
Oh, you're saying to the consumer?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's all a scam, right? They'll change the length of a skirt by half an inch. Really?
You don't... It's a form of art. Come on. I'm being serious. That's the way you look at it, because maybe you look at fashion as, or dressing as being something that's more utilitarian. But for a lot of people, it's about self-expression and art.
We've been talking a lot lately about the shirts with holes in the shoulders, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So to me, that is the fashion industry. Maybe they're not doing it consciously, coming up with a new way to get people to buy their product. I guess that's what all businesses do. But I do feel like they manipulate women in a way to make them buy the latest thing when the next to latest thing would have been just as fine.
Okay, and you're saying that you don't, you think it's a stupid trend, or that women are paying more for less fabric?
No, it's not even that, Suzanne, and we're running out of time here, but it's just that it's different. So next year's model is going to be different, and consumers are going to feel they have to buy next year's model to keep up, and then the next year after that, they're going to put the previous year's model in the back of the closet. So, but when I say manipulate,
I hear you.
Yeah.
My only parting comment is that it really does depend on how you look at clothing. Is something simply to wear and to guard from the elements, or as a form of self-expression? It's a choice.
Right. Well, I've got my Marquette hoodie on, so clearly it's self-expression.
I'm sorry I missed that today.
We'll talk again next week. Suzanne Muchen, the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNRadio.com. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Steve. Yep.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. You've heard it plenty here on WGN Radio. The Cook County real estate market has been lagging to jump back ever since the recession. But now a new report from the Civic Federation finds that we're more than $100 billion behind our recent peak. From 2015 to 2016, the county's property value only increased $30 billion. And I know you may think $30 billion sounds like a lot, but it's significantly down from the pre-recession peak, off more than $100 billion. But thankfully, things work in cycles, and the market is sure to bounce back eventually. One thing at the top of the cycle, Chicago's skyscrapers. 8 new skyscrapers are cracking the top 20 buildings in the city's skyline. All these buildings are 850 feet or taller, primarily residing in the Loop and downtown area. But this is good for the real estate market too, because more and more of these buildings are multi-use space, housing retail, offices, real estate, and even hotels. Here's the continued steady progress of adding to the world's most stunning skyline. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, Kelly Leonard is in the studio. He is the host of Getting to Yes And, a podcast that you can get at WGNRadio.com and all sorts of other places, executive director at Second City as well. Kelly, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, I'm really interested in this week's subject, because the author you talked to is John Sachs. The name of the book is Unsafe Thinking.
Right.
And it's about expertise.
Yeah, and how expertise can be a thinking trap.
I love that idea, because the more you know, in many ways, the more you know about less, the less you know.
Yeah, right. So the idea
here... That was a terrible idea, but you get the point.
The point is that we have success, and we have a certain pattern of thinking, and we tend to stick to that pattern. So if we were innovative once, that's awesome, but it becomes much harder to be innovative a second, a third, or fourth time if we keep doing stuff the way we've always done it.
Because it worked before.
Yeah.
And that's why when they talk about putting work teams together, that they will try to find completely incongruous minds to work together, right?
Right. And this is an argument also for diversity in the workplace. And by diversity, it's you know, I found out that Ernst & Young hires people on the spectrum. More and more people are looking for people from different socioeconomic backgrounds. And it's interesting, he fills it with science and stories, and the stories are always cool, and they're about people who have practiced unsafe thinking. So my favorite is about a guy named Jason Klein, who was a marketing executive. And his job was to name the minor league baseball team in Hartford, Connecticut. So he crowdsourced people, all sent in these names, and there's all these cool names, and he picked the Yard Goats.
The Yard Goats.
People were furious. They hated this name, and it is a stupid name. However, within 2 years, merch sales were just you know, out of this world. And ticket sales to the games were doing great. And later, one of the baseball executives said, if you're going to ask me if I'm in the baseball business or the circus business in minor league, I'm in the circus business.
And he knew that. He recognized that.
Yeah. So he just had to think divergently.
So unsafe thinking. That's funny because you can also be paralyzed by safe thinking, right? You think too safely sometimes.
Well, and his point is that our default mode is to do the safe thinking thing.
I see. Okay.
And we're actually taught this when we're kids through most educational system of like, get the answer right. It's important to get the answer right. And so much in our work in improvisation is about allowing you to be wrong to find what's right.
Right. I was going to ask you about that. How does all of this apply to improv then?
We had a great talk about that because what's so cool about these guests is they don't know my field and improvisation in general, but it's easy for them to figure out how they are connected. So in this case, the idea is like, well, how do you get people to, you know, think in an unsafe manner? And we have an exercise literally where we have two people walk around a room and the job of one of the person is to point to an item and misname it. Which is not easy to do. Like when you're walking around, you see an ashtray and you say pelican.
Right.
You know, because your impulse is to say the right thing. And that is a practice in thinking sort of out of the box.
And then the other person has to go with that?
Yeah, they just have to go with that. Well, and that becomes an exercise.
The name of the podcast is Getting to Yes and this week's guest, John Sachs, author of Unsafe Thinking. Kelly Leonard, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.